Thank you for tuning in to Hacks and Hobbies with your host, Junaid. We're visited by our amazing guests coming from all walks of life. We want to learn their story, their struggles, and their journey on how they got to where they are today. So stick around. Welcome back to another episode of Hacks and Hobbies. Most entrepreneurs start with passion. But what does it take to turn that spark into real business purpose? Today, I'm joined by William Bissett, seasoned financial planner, founder of Portis Wealth Advisors, and the host of Charting Opportunities series. After interviewing more than 160 podcast guests, William has collected stories, insights, and lessons that can change how you think about growth and resilience. William, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me on. I'm excited about our conversation today.
Absolutely, man. It's excited to bring you back on. So let's start at the beginning. What inspired you to step into both financial planning and podcasting as platform for impact?
Financial planning stumbled upon. Was an economics major that graduated in the middle of the 2000 to 2002 recession. Mm-hmm. Started selling life insurance and realized I didn't like selling a product without understanding what the purpose was.
Yeah.
Left that world and found a financial planning firm and started working with them. And really loved the aspect of helping clients understand, right? Like I always thought teaching was a big component of what we did. And so that's been a great path of my career over the course of the last 20 years is to be able to teach people. The podcast actually, I've run two podcasts webinar type series. I actually had a software as a startup. Software as a service startup, I tried to get off the ground from 2012 to 2015 and ended up not working. But in the process, I wrote a number of peer-reviewed articles and journals, got picked up as a kind of an expert in estate administration. Nice. The New York Times ran an article on our startup. And so I kind of caught that startup bug. And so the first podcast that we did, after I shut down my startup, I joined the Charlotte Angel Fund and became active in the local entrepreneurial community. Mm-hmm. And I really wanted to help that entrepreneurial community grow. And the best way to do that was to give them a microphone and let them tell their story. And so that podcast kind of grew out of nurturing the startup community, a passion. I always say that startup founders, business owners have an energy level that not many other people have. If you can hang around those people, then maybe you can steal some of their energy from them. So that first podcast was my way of trying to steal that energy and passion from startup founders.
Dude, that's so amazing because you're absolutely right that the energy is contagious. The energy is, you know, something that's going to attract so many more people. And just like you were attracted to them, your podcast was then being attracted by people wanting to, you know, again, take a little bit of that energy from those conversations as well.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's and then, you know, the benefit too is that along the way is it teaches you so much, right? Like I always say that the greatest thing about my life as a financial planner is we get to learn from our clients. Mm-hmm. And one of the greatest things about being a podcast host is the same thing, right? You get to learn from your guests, like what did they, what were their trials? What were their failures? What were their successes? How were they able to push through? And so, you know, just being around smart people and learning from smart people. And that was, you know, one of the huge benefits, one of the huge lessons that I continue to gather from running that podcast.
I love it, man. So take us back to 2019. And I totally resonate with the fact that, you know, you learned so much from the guests that you bring on. And just like you, I've learned so much from the guests that I brought on over the years, you know. So let's take us back to 2019 when you launched Portis. What challenges did you face and how did you reframe them as opportunities?
So it's funny, the word portus actually comes from the Latin for Latin phrase, right? So opportunities broken down as OP and then PORT. Believe in opportunities. I believe that there is opportunity around every corner. There's challenges around every corner too. And man, every business faces challenges. So for us, our biggest challenge right out of the gate was we had clients in two different places, right? So as an our registered investment advisor, we work with large financial institutions to custody our clients' assets. So half of our clients had their money at Fidelity, and the other half of the money was at Schwab, and we have a special relationship where we can manage those accounts. And so I went out to Schwab and Fidelity to make sure that I was going to be able to continue that relationship when I started my own firm. And they both said yes, and they said, come back to us when you have state approval and we'll be ready to go. Midway, so that was December of 2018. So with that, I went out to each one of my clients and said, look, this is what's going to happen. This is how we're going to do it. I'd love to have y'all continue on with us. And I told my Fidelity clients, look, there's nothing going to happen. You're going to stay at Fidelity, and my Schwab clients, nothing's going to happen. You're going to stay at Schwab. And in middle of February of 2019, Fidelity came back to me and said, hey, look, we've decided to change the game, and we're not going to let you come on board as an advisor and serve as your custodian anymore. And so I promised the world to, hey, look, it's going to be easy, it's going to be simple, and you're not going to have to do anything. And then half of our clients, half of our revenue, and some folks that I've worked with for a number of years, I had to go back out and say, hey, look, I know I told y'all that you're going to be able to stay at Fidelity, but guess what?
Guess what?
That's not going to happen.
The
And
game, they changed
so
the game on us.
they changed the game on us. And so, the challenge was we had to make sure that their process, not only in joining us as a firm, but in moving from Fidelity to Schwab, we had to make sure that it was white gloved as much as it possibly could be so that their experience was seamless. And fortunately, every one of those Fidelity clients gave us the opportunity to succeed. And they're all still with us today. There were some sleepless nights. My assistant, Jill, at that point in time will tell you that it was more stressful than it should have been, but we ended up both winning as a result.
Dude, that's awesome.
So.
That's a story of resilience. That's a story of understanding people, right? Because some things you cannot control, and those are things that companies that we're providing services through might come and, hey, we don't want to do this anymore, because they probably saw something happen in their quarters where they weren't making as much money. And that's when usually happens, right? They'll make changes to policies, they'll make changes to how to do business because the shareholders aren't getting enough money back.
Yeah, and sometimes it's just a small business where the shareholders is just the family. Big business, small business, all shareholders are impacted, whether or not there's one shareholder or multiples, right?
So you
So.
interviewed over 160 guests. Was there a moment when you realized that this wasn't just a podcast, but a growth engine for your business and your clients? Because you're asking them questions, you're being very interested in them and in their stories. Talk to me about that and what patterns you saw across those entrepreneurs.
Yeah, so what we ended up doing as a result of being interested in the startup scene and trying to nurture that is many of our guests were startup founders. And one of the things that they use so often is, or the phrase that they use often is fail fast. And because the faster you fail, the more you can learn from those failures, right? What went wrong, what broke, and then how can we make it stronger and better on the other side of it? And as a kid growing up, I always thought failure was a bad thing. And then, backtrack a little bit, and I'll kind of parallel the story. in 2017, I started building a gym in my garage. Mm-hmm. And so we've got a full squat rack, a bench, kettlebells, dumbbells, barbells, a rower, all kinds of equipment in there.
Nice.
And we put a whiteboard in there too, so we could write out our workouts and different things and whatnot. And as my kids started coming out there and asking me what we were doing, at that point in time, they were younger. Today, they're almost 16 and 13.
Yeah.
I started explaining it to them, and I wrote on the board, failure creates strength. Right. Because essentially what you're trying to go to in the gym is you're trying to create failure, because that's where your muscles grow the most. Right. Is when you hit a failure state. And so those two things kind of happened at the same time as I started to learn more and more from startup founders about failure. Right. And how failure, how they rush to failure.
Yeah.
And then how people in a gym setting want to hit failure as well. And in both instances, that failure is where growth is created. And so what that podcast taught me and what the gym in my garage taught me in trying to educate the kids was failure is not a bad thing, right? Like failure is only a bad thing if you let it define that moment in time. But if you let failure educate you and help you grow, failure actually creates strength. It creates growth. And so that's certainly one of the biggest takeaways I took from startup founders is you can't be afraid to try something. It's worth learning from, even if it doesn't work the way you think it should.
You know, you said it absolutely. Failure is growth, right? Without failure, your muscles are not going to grow. Without failure, you're not going to know what went wrong. Because if you keep winning, you're just going to stay the course of doing the same thing. But when you fail is when you find new ways to win.
Yeah. No, I mean, absolutely. I mean, it's a, hey, look, failure can be failure, right? Like some people hit it and they give up and say, oh gosh, well, of course that didn't work. It never works out for me. You know, the self-defeating mentality. And so you can let failure define you, or again, learning from the startup founders, learning from the gym, you can realize that on the other side of failure, if you treat it the right way, is a growth mindset.
It is. And sometimes you don't even name it failure anymore, right? Once you built it into your system, because just this weekend, I went on a bike ride, 21-mile bike ride. In the last 3 miles, my rear derailleur would not change gears. It was stuck on the lowest gear. I'm like, what's going on? Now, most people are like, okay, I'm done. I'm just going to put the bike. I'm going to call Uber and go. But I was like, no, let me just keep going. My front derailleur is still working. I can, you know, change it to harder to easier. And then, you know, ride the hills as they're coming. But I kept going. I powered through that failure, even though this thing broke. And I didn't even know what happened. I was like, what's going on? Let me see if I can fiddle around. So after we were done, I took the bike to the shop and they're like, hey, the thing broke inside. So obviously you weren't able to change. So, you know, they were able to switch it out. But again, that's failure, right? So the quicker you fail, the more you can grow, the more you can realize and overcome. And I posted my best time in the past few weeks of, you know, riding fastest mile, average mile, because I was like, okay, let me just power through it. So failure can be seen many different ways. It all comes down to that mindset.
Like
you mentioned.
I mean, the great thing about failure is it does, right? It forces you to, I mean, in that situation, you had to adapt in a way that you haven't had to adapt before.
Yeah.
And as a result of that, you now know that you've got the internal gear that you didn't know you had 7 days ago, which is you might not use that internal gear all the time,
exactly.
But it's really cool to know you've got it.
Yeah. You know, towards the end, we were talking earlier in the green room how, you know, I've got a knee pain, you got a knee problem, and my knee started hurting. I'm like, oh no, not this. Right. So there's multiple things that were causing me to stop and slow down, or, you know, just give up. But then what I also had was my teammates, right? So I also had teammates. They're like, hey, let's keep going. Let's power through. It's just it's just, you know, half a mile to go. You know, there's mostly flat surfaces. So you have people around you that are also pushing you, that are, you know, helping you move along that journey.
Yeah. No, which was, I mean, it goes back. I mean, it's another great lesson I learned in doing that podcast. And we now have a new one that's targeted towards business owners as well. Mm-hmm. But that one was, again, more specifically focused on startups. Yeah. And founders. And one of the things that I realized was not every startup, but more and more startups these days have co-founders, right? Like it used mm-hmm. to be a long time ago that you ran into a lot of situations where it's a single person that founded or whatever. But what you learn in talking to founders is it's so beneficial to have that partner, that yin and the yang sitting there. Mm-hmm. You know, some person can take something and somebody can take something else. And it's just like in the gym, right? You've got an accountability partner.
Yeah.
And somebody that can say, hey, look, we need to do this, or you said you were going to do that. How are you doing your progress? How can I help you out?
Exactly.
Right. Like sometimes we need help in the gym, right? Like we hit failure. Yeah. We need that guy to get the bar off our chest.
Exactly.
And the same thing in the business format, right? Like sometimes we can't break through something on our own, and having that partner or having those folks around you to get you through those challenges is really, really key and helpful.
Mm-hmm. William, let's dig into some of the lessons that you learned over the years, not just about Bunny, but about mindset as well. And that's kind of what we've been talking about. It's kind of funny how, you know, the conversations go, and then you're always pulled into a certain topic. And for our topic, it happens to be mindset, you know, having that external, internal support systems in place.
Yeah, no. You know, when you go out in that entrepreneurial world, the first time I did my first startup, I did it by myself.
Mm-hmm.
And you can enter this deep, dark place, right? You're out there by yourself. It presents its own set of challenges. And for me, I'll go back and say, I didn't realize it initially. But I realized how important it was to have people that cared and that had complementary skill sets around you.
Yeah.
And what I've learned over the course of the last, 20 years and being a financial planner is you get that in life as well. And, in life partners, right? So, I mean, oftentimes we're dealing with families and husbands and wives bring different things to the table. Being partners and being, accountability partners and coaches mm-hmm. and support structure and whatnot. And again, I'll go back and say, I used to think that if I was going to do something, it was, I'm in the rowboat and I'm the only person rowing the boat.
Oh my God.
And what I've learned is, it's not just the business side, right? Like I've, unfortunately married people, I think have a leg up. If they lean into it the right way and they've got the right partner, because you've got that, accountability person at home, you've got that person to lean into, you've got that support network that is there to cheer you on, and push you along at the same time.
I love that. Yep. I love that. William, I love it because you're absolutely right. You know, there's cases where a startup starts and, you have both the wife and the husband, in that business together. And then they're, they're pushing each other. Or you have the founder, co-founder kind of setup where everybody, they have a partner to bounce off ideas. Tell me a story from a guest that really stuck with you and why around this area as well.
I'm going to go 2 hours ago actually on you. And not a guest on the podcast. And I was talking with a client, so they live out in Colorado and they have two locations for their business currently. and they stumbled upon an opportunity to purchase a third location from somebody within the last 6 weeks. And so we were talking about that opportunity on the phone call, and they closed on the deal on August 15th. And they, you know, they just told me today that they closed on it a month ago. Yeah. So that's awesome. When will it be operational? Like, when are y'all going to be to go in, outfit the location, get everything ready? And so the husband steps in and says, well, if she had it her way, it would be October 1st. And she turns and says, well, if you had it your way, it wouldn't be in until early next year. And so he's like, I think we're going to be able to get in there by the end of October. And that's just that perfect, right? Like the wife really wanted to push. She's ready. Yes, their third location. They already replicated that model from the first into the second. They have a goal of having 10 locations at the end of it. Whereas the husband wants to make sure that everything gets stacked correctly, right? Like he's the methodical person. She's the entrepreneur on the push. And they're working together through that scenario in order to, you know, deliver the new location in the same manner or in a similar manner that they've created success in the first two locations. So it's just, you know, it's just that perfect, you know, if the wife was out there alone and was doing it without him there, she would rush to get that first location up, and the experience of people in that, or that third location up, and the experience of those people that come into that third location would be a step down from the experience that the other two locations are currently offering, because she would have missed steps. Where having the husband there to make sure that they're hitting those steps. Now, he wants to make sure every step is perfectly executed and implemented before they have that third location up and running. And she's going to recognize that, look, there's going to be some things that we're just going to have to learn. It's a new location. It's got, you know, different ins and outs, or it's got a different, you know, shopping center, whatever it ends up being. We're going to have to fail some with that third location, just like we did with two and three. It won't be as much failure. We'll be more methodical, the experience. So as a result, the partnership between the husband and wife is going to create this perfect compromise that the business is ready for at this point in time. So again, not a guess, but just 60 minutes ago, coming out of that conversation.
That's amazing, man. That's amazing, because you're absolutely right. There's always two camps, right? There's always somebody's like, okay, let's go, 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 go. But then you realize it is going to take time. It is going to take some energy. And we see that with our kids, you know, when they were younger, they would take a lot longer to learn something and, you know, start to crawling. But then as soon as they're crawling and they're walking, they're running, right? They're running everywhere. So it's really good to have that balance with a two-party system and, you know, having those two come to that consensus, hey, this is how we work perfectly. You know, we've got the rhythm, I mean, we've got the heart rate, all of those things dialed in.
It's again, it goes back to, it's the beautiful thing about having an accountability partner is, I mean, I go back to, you know, the gym, my neighbor and I work out together, and I'm the person that always thinks that we can do more, and he's always the person that thinks that we can do less. And so, like, I'm always like, we'll step outside, and we've got notebooks from the last 6 years of all the stuff that we've done. And we'll have a new workout routine or whatever we're doing. It's like, oh man, we can do 185, we can do whatever weight that we're going to do today. And he's like, no way can we do that anymore, William. slow down. So, but if he had it his way, we'd be underneath. And if we had it my way, we would hit failure on the 60 seconds in. So that relationship works really well together in that world.
Yeah, for sure. Now, you've also said that resilience is one of the most overlooked business strategy. Can you unpack that a little bit?
I mean, it just goes back to, you know, failure's always right there with you, right? We started a new speaker series, podcast, if you will, in October of last year, October of 2024. And oh man, it's been a series of mishaps and failures all along the way.
Yeah.
There's been, let's see, we've done 9 episodes now. And there's been 9 reasons to quit times 100, right? The software that we were using wasn't right. The microphones that we're using weren't right. Too many people were registering and not showing up. The location was miserable. But if we give up, we stop delivering value to business owners and entrepreneurs and those clients and potential clients that we work with. And so you've just got to lean into it, right? Yeah. I mean, there's a point in time in certain ventures that it's clear it's just not going to work. But you know, perfect is the enemy of progress, right? And absolutely. So you've really just got to understand what the mission is. And it's the old adage of Rome wasn't built in a day, right? Like you're going to have enormous steps forward. And then that wave is going to knock you all the way back or pretty damn close to all the way back. And, you've got to continue to see what the end goal is. And you've got to realize that there is no straight line, right? The graph, the spreadsheet tells you it just goes that way, but we all know what life looks like, right? Yep. And so you've got to be willing to endure those hardships to get to the other side and create what it is you're trying to create.
I love that, William. As you shared, right, it all comes down to the resilience, keep moving forward, have that path, have somebody along with you so that you can keep moving. One of my favorite examples is one of my favorite hobbies is to build Lego sets, right? And the Lego sets, they'll give you the entire booklet, they'll package up those blocks, and then even after all of that organization, guess what? You're still looking for that one piece that's going to go into place, right? Because things always are going to change up. My son, he loves building, you know, custom homes, and we've gone on a spree to buy all these brick elements because he wants to build these buildings. And he'll make these little setups, and then he'll leave them in the Lego room. And then, of course, my 3-year-old comes and destroys it, and he's like, "Oh my God, why?" Right? So things are going to happen. That's life, right? That's life that's going to show up. For example, you're driving from, you know, let's say you're going on a road trip. Like, okay, it's a 6-hour drive, but you end up taking 8 hours to get to it because you might hit a spot of traffic jam. You might need to use the bathroom, go stop for eat, gas. So entrepreneurship is the same thing. The fact of the matter is you're getting back in the car and driving because you want to get to that destination. And we kind of forget that as business owners. What's the goal? What's the end goal? What's the destination we're trying to get to today? And having that resilience, I think, is super, super important. Now let's... go ahead.
You're exactly right. I mean, the road trip's a great analogy.
I love road trips. I've talked about freeways and you know, combination or freeways and entrepreneurship side by side because it's so real and people can relate to that analogy so much easier. Let's switch gears to a little on the personal angle and fun connection. So you mentioned that woodworking is a hobby that you wish you got into. What is it about working with your hands that appeals to you, especially compared to finance?
Yeah, I mean, the reality of that is when you're a business owner in the finance world, you're creating something and you're seeing the impact that you're having on clients' lives.
Yeah.
You're seeing the impact you're having on employees' lives. But it's a little bit more abstract, right? Like it's harder to identify. Mm-hmm. And so in a woodworking world, I think, and again, I've never had a chance to get into it, but I kind of see it from the outside. You start off with this block of wood, mm-hmm. Or you start off with something, and you get to see it come to creation, right? Like you get the true reward of the visualization coming together.
The transformation, so have you, right?
Yeah, so you get this visual confirmation and finality, right? Like when we work with clients, we don't get finality in their lives, right? Like unfortunately, like if we were good in leading them along the way, we get reaffirmation along the way that they're able to do this or able to do that. But ultimately, you don't see it until they're no longer here, right? Like did everything work in a way that was fitting for the client? That finality is many, many moons down the road. Whereas, you know, you build a chair or a desk or whatever it is that you build in a woodworking, it's finished, you're done, you've got it. The beauty, the success, the challenges, and all of that is right there in front of you. And you can touch it, see it, feel it, which is a different creation than what we're doing with our clients and the value that we're creating for them. So that's that whole woodworking component. Just, I guess it gives me finality where I don't get it very often in my current work world.
I totally get that, man. I love woodworking, and I've seen those blocks of wood, you know, transform into, you know, bowls or, you know, different elements of maybe it's a leg, maybe it's a river table. Like those things were so hot back in the days, or even now, I think every once in a while I'll see those things. But what's beautiful is that the person who's working on it has an image in his mind that he's getting to. Right. Yeah. And as entrepreneurs, we got to have that vision of where you want to be in the next 5 years, the next 10 years. And that vision's you're probably never going to reach that vision, because we as human beings, we're constantly growing. And there was a talk where I was listening to Matthew McConaughey, and his coach would ask him, hey, where do you want to be? Or, you know, what's the best version of you? And he's like, he would be like, oh, it's, you know, 5 years from now, I'm going to be the best version of me. And come back to him, you know, 5 years later, what's the best version of you? It's like 10 years from now. So he's always further away, because as human beings, we're constantly growing. I've got another fun question for you, William. I have to ask, Seinfeld, what's one Seinfeld moment or character that mirrors something you've seen in the business world? Because I love that show, and I've probably seen the whole thing 2 or 3 times in my lifetime.
Awesome. You know, I'm going to go kind of off script on this one.
Okay.
One of my favorite episodes of Seinfeld, and I'm trying to figure out how to bring it into our conversation, is when the chicken place moves in across the street from Kramer. And it's got the bright electric lights.
Oh yeah.
But he doesn't think about the benefit, or he doesn't think about the electric lights at first, right? He just loves their chicken.
Yeah.
And so, you know, he's down there eating the chicken and, you know, super happy. I think he sees Newman down there, like Newman's down there eating chicken all the time or whatever. Yeah. And then after a couple nights, that bright light that keeps shining, like Kramer's always wired anyways, right? Yes. But he's not sleeping at night. So he's like ultra wired, ultra crazy. and so if I try to draw a parallel to that, back to your question, I mean, it's like everything you want is not always a positive, right? And in the manner that you get it isn't always a positive either, right? Like it's... so just because you're getting what you want out of life or getting what you want out of something doesn't mean that it's the right thing for you. And that, it can't be harmful or hurtful in different conditions. Right. So, you know, and it goes back to kind of what you were saying a few minutes ago on the best version of ourselves, right? Like we think the best version of ourselves is this. Like God knows if I go think back and think about the best version of myself, when I was 18 years old. I mean, I'm sure as hell glad I'm not that, right? If that was the best version of myself, and that was a massive failure.
Yeah.
And there's that book that's out there that a lot of people have read recently called The Gap and the Gain, right? Like, and it's that struggle of an entrepreneur. It's the struggle of most people, right? It's the, if you're trying to get there, you're never really looking back and seeing how far you've come.
Exactly.
And so, you know, Kramer got what he wanted. He got the chicken place right next door. But the end result of it, it wasn't what he needed.
Yeah.
And it was the same thing in life. Oftentimes we get what we want, but that's not really what we need. And we've got to continue to figure out how to get better.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Kramer, such my favorite character is probably Kramer, because he's the entrepreneurial of all of them. Everybody else is cynical and, you know, just complaining about everything else. And he's always trying different things, right? He's always, and which is really fun. And as entrepreneurs, we're in that same boat. We're trying new things. We're trying to fail fast. We're being resilient. And I love this conversation that we've had so far, William. You've given us a lot to think about, especially that resilience isn't just about weathering storms, but about using them to chart those opportunities. I love it.
Yeah. And then I'll say too, I'll go back and I'll say the another great episode is when George takes his pillow and sleeps underneath his desk.
Yeah.
Right. Yes. Sometimes we all just need a little rest, right? Sometimes we all just need a little rest.
Just need a little bit of rest. Amen. Amen. He's got the pillow, he's got the clock in there, and he's like sleeping in there. And then the boss shows up, he's like, I think there's a ticking happening. Is there a bomb in here?
Yeah.
Call the bomb squad. And you're like, oh shit, what am I doing? Oh my God, I love it, William. Thank you so much, man. This was so much fun. And in part two of our conversation, which folks can tune in next, we're going to be diving deeper into the tactical side, how entrepreneurs with high incomes can protect, grow, and sustain their wealth without losing focus on family and purpose. William, can you give us one quick preview of what's ahead in that discussion?
Creating or adding growth, you know, sometimes what we realize in working with clients is that growth is internally driven, right? And then sometimes these days I keep coming back to sometimes the growth is outside of us, and that's outside in terms of, you know, acquisitions.
Yeah.
And I think entrepreneurs are more and more leaning into that internal versus external growth. And, you know, how do you perceive, most entrepreneurs have always been so focused on just growing their own operations. And much like the clients we were talking about earlier, they've essentially acquired that next leg of growth. And I think the next 5 to 10 years with business owners looking to exit and other business owners looking to succeed, rather, there's a lot of opportunity to do it both ways, and understanding whether or not your business is prepared, right? Like, have you done the right things internally to get yourself ready on to make an acquisition and to bring another entity in-house and absorb it and scale that next entity up into your own? I think there's some really cool things that we can talk about on the internal growth engine as well as the external acquisition strategy as well. So I'm excited about our next leg of conversation.
Amen. Amen. Thank you so much again, William. Where can my audience connect with you and learn more about Portis?
Yeah, no, so our website is www.portisadvisors.com. And then I'm fairly active on LinkedIn. You know, obviously, LinkedIn.com, William Bissett would be the way to connect with me there.
Perfect.
Or my two platforms I hang out a lot from, promoting and writing on our internal blog, as well as, you know, writing stuff out there on LinkedIn.
Perfect, William. Thank you so much again for this conversation, and I'll be sure to include all of this stuff in the show notes. As you know, being a podcast host yourself, thanks again for coming, man. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks so much again. I'm excited about part 2. We're going to have some fun.
Awesome. Guys, thanks so much for listening. Excited to bring you back this part 2. Make sure to come back for that one because you'll walk away with real practical steps for your financial future. Thanks again for listening. Connect with William through the links below, and we'll catch you in the next one. Thank you for listening to Hacks and Hobbies. You can find additional information on the guest today on their website, hacksandhobbies.com. Please feel free to subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss out on upcoming interviews with amazing guests.